senior editor at Friends Journal. And this month's issue is on Quaker Spaces. And the lead article is Jean Schnell here. And Jean is a member of Framingham Meeting. And she's joining us from Ashland, Massachusetts. So thank you, Jean. Thank you for joining us here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for the article. So it's the lead article here in the August issue. The issue is called Quaker Spaces. And every time we would have a staff meeting talking about like, oh, we should find articles for this, someone, another staffer would say, I saw on Facebook these wonderful photos of New England meeting houses. And I'd be like, yes, I know. Aren't they wonderful? So we kept having people, and maybe folks at home can see a little bit of the spread here. There's the cover of it. So tell us a little bit about your project, Jean, photographing these meeting houses.
Well, I really began seriously photographing in the meeting houses in 2014 when I was sort of searching around for a photographic project to do. I had done some photography in my own meeting as part of a class I had taken many years before, and I sort of went back to that because the reception that those photographs had received in my own meeting was overwhelmingly positive. They seemed to represent something about that meeting house that was meaningful for the people who went there. And I thought, how great would that be to just see what's out there in the Quaker meeting houses in Massachusetts? I had no idea there would be 23 of them. That's a pretty big number, I think. And had really had fun searching them out, finding them, going to them, spending a day in each one, and really learned so much about Quaker meeting houses here and Quaker history in Massachusetts. It was really fun.
Right. And did you learn the history through the architecture and the histories of the meetings? What's some of the history that you learned that might not be obvious to, you know, the everyday friend who's not doing this kind of a tour?
Well, as I went to each meeting house, I had decided I would write a blog a little bit about each visit and write about the meeting house history. And that sort of having to have something intelligent to write about made me actually think about what I was looking at. I usually picked up pamphlets from each meeting house. I looked on their meeting house websites. I talked to the people there. And it really made me think about Quaker history in a way I hadn't before. I had to get some books out at my own library at my meeting house and really do some research on the web and learn things to be able to explain sort of things about what I was seeing, because mostly the meeting houses are very plain and they're benches. And, you know, how do you talk about that 23 times in 23 different ways?
Sure. that would be a challenge. There's a certain inherent contradiction almost to this, because these meeting houses are...
Now, I seem to have lost you somehow.
Oh, it does. It says paused. Why did it say that? Oh.
Here we go. I'm sorry. I don't know what happened.
There we go. Hi again, folks at home. So I was just saying there's a sort of inherent contradiction that, you know, these are, you know, meant to be very plain structures. Quakers were, you know, getting rid of all of the churchy structures, the steeple houses, and the crosses in the places where sermons would be delivered. So, and almost having things that look like barns, you know, creating these structures that look like barns. And there's some old meeting houses in England where they even have a room for the sheepdogs to be in the meeting house during worship. I mean, very, very plain structures. And yet, they are so beautiful, some of these old meeting houses. How did you sort of see that contradiction?
You know, I didn't really see it as a contradiction. Many of the meeting houses have been changed and updated. And I spent a day in each meeting house. I usually meditated before I photographed and sat there for a long time. And as you begin to work, you begin to see the beauty of the light coming through the windows, and it's really all about the light. So I never worried about what the weather was going to be outside, whether it was blue sky or gray sky outside, or, you know, I just sat there and watched as the light came in the window, and there was always beauty to be found. It wasn't made up. It was just there. And also a lot of stories in the meeting house. Some have, you know, individual items that were comfort items. I found fans and East sandwich that they used in during the summer heat to fan themselves. And, you know, some places have blankets to keep themselves warm in the wintertime. And, you know, there's a lot of different variations. Variations in the color of the cushions that are there or the walls. Not a lot of variations. They're very small.
Yes.
They're there. Yeah. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Oh, sure, sure. And there's also, I mean, you have a spot where you have the, oh, there you go. Sorry. More technical glitches are on my side. You have a spot where you show the pulley system for the partitions.
Yes.
So you have this too, like these sort of histories of like
yes.
theologies or ways of practices that we don't really have. Can you tell us about yes. the pulley systems for those outside the Northeast U.S. who might not
well,
have seen
the Quakers had a system of, excuse me, pulleys and levers with which they used to lower separation down between the men's and women's meeting house, men's and women's side. And they use that to separate the men's and women's business meetings. Mm-hmm. Now in many meeting houses, those are lowered permanently to divide up the space. Sometimes they still raise and lower them. Many people have taken them out altogether, but they still exist in some of the meeting houses. And it's sort of it's a piece of history. That I really had to think about, because when you think about men's and women's business meetings or separating the sexes, it sounds very unequal.
Right.
But actually, it was at the forefront of women's equality, because they allowed the women to have their own business meeting rather than be out of the meeting altogether or not present during meetings at all. So mm-hmm. It was a very interesting piece of history. And I know because I was in Valley Meeting, I grew up in Valley Meeting, and they had an old winch in their attic too. So they're still around in a few places, and they're all hand built. They're all handmade. Some of them they're all different in the way they have this system of pulleys and levers. So they're very ingenious pieces of history there.
Sure, and I just sort of love that you can sort of see this Quaker old folk ways and the theologies of, you know, separating through that. I guess you can also see that sometimes the way benches are arranged in an old meeting house, whether it's sort of the classic where there's a facing bench where the elders would have sat and watched over yeah. everyone, or whether people have turned around in a circle. Did you see variations on that too, changed benches? And
I did. I think one of the Quaker testimonies is community. And the way that came through in the meeting houses is to have the benches, and also simplicity, facing the center with a facing bench at the end, so that the community was facing inward and there was no outside distraction for them. Some of the more recent meetings that were programmed have more pew-like benches, and they all face the front with a pulpit in the front. And one meeting house was in the, they were just transitioning from all front-facing benches to more inward-facing benches, because they were trying to figure out if they were going to continue with programmed or go to unprogrammed meeting. So there is some variation there.
Yeah, that's neat. Did you take any, one of the things that's sort of obvious when you see these is that there's no people in these. How did you make that decision not to have people? And some of these meeting houses, you can't even tell whether it's an active meeting house or even a yes. historical one. So
well,
how'd you make that artistic decision?
I have had many people say, where are the people? Mm-hmm. And I'm not very good at taking people, so my decision was really very easy. Mm-hmm. I may try to incorporate more people objects or evidence that people are there in future photographs, because that has been some suggestions that I have received about my photographs. But for me, that was an easy decision. I like photographing buildings. I don't mm-hmm. enjoy photographing people so much.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was really thinking about fine art photography, which is, you know, you develop your own style and you mm-hmm. work at it till you get it. And for me, the people photographs almost seem more documentary. And I just want to say, I don't have all my photographs on my website, but I've got many photographs that could be documentary. For example, I got one in the West Falmouth meeting that I really love. It was an old sign that had probably been used in the 60s that said draft counseling. Oh, I mean, sure. That's really a piece of Quaker history that's there. And I'm so glad that I had the chance to document some of these before they disappear.
Sure. Are you going to put them in any kind of archives, or have you talked about
it? I don't know exactly what to do with all of these photographs at this point. I'm sort of struggling with that, you know? I don't know the answer to that. So maybe some of your listeners or readers will have some suggestions for me, because I think there is a valuable visual history here, not only with the buildings, some of which are disappearing, the winching systems, signs like that, and evidence that of some of the Quaker history of the past.
Yeah, well, I hope you do. I know there are historical libraries, Haverford and Swarthmore and Earlham all have these, North Carolina, Guilford, there's some. So I hope someone gets a hold of these.
Well, recently I did a portfolio review, and one of the suggestions that was made to me was to contact professors of religion at various universities, and maybe Haverford and Swarthmore and Guilford and Earlham would be a great place to start. So, yeah, maybe.
Sure, that would be great. So, so what next is for you? Do you have other projects that you're photographic projects that you're diving into?
Actually, this has taken up so much of my time. My daughter's getting married in October, so my photography is on sort of a hold right now. I am going up to yearly meeting. Hopefully, we'll get some people involved in the pictures. I'm going to see what comes out of that. One thought I have is to extend this project to other New England states. I've also had some people email me and say, you know, we have a meeting house in Honolulu.
Oh, there you go. And
that would be a great thing to do, you know, just to visit other meeting houses, other places. So we'll see. I don't know. I don't have a specific plan at this point.
Sure. Well, it'd be interesting to have more meetings in other parts of the country or world where, you know, they're not all these sort of old meeting houses. And you have some of these are newer meeting houses, but obviously they will look different in other parts of the country, and, you know, meeting house that might be, we have one article in here with someone who's talking about how their French church was built in the '70s and it has a certain color palette that, hasn't, aged necessarily so well. It's not so fashionable. So it'd be interesting to see sort of newer meeting houses and different types of meeting houses to get the Gene Snell kind of look there.
Yeah, it would be.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we'll see some more things from you there. And you have a website, and we'll put a link on the bottom, but tell us your website.
GeneSnell.com. And there's a whole section there on meeting houses on the top menu bar, and the blogs are found in the blog section.
Yeah. So what we have in French Journal is just a tiny, tiny representation of all the photos. You have tons of photos, it seems.
And, yes, I do.
Long essays on everyone. So it's well worth going through. And you're also on Facebook.
I am on Facebook, on Framing the Light. I haven't put anything in there. I haven't had any new work recently, but you never know what's going to come up there.
Wonderful. And there's, you know, it's a great way of looking through. It looks like you put up hundreds of photos on there too. So
yes,
it's a great way of going through those. So thank you, Jean, for joining us. And thank you for
Martin.
Cover article here. Again, this is the current issue, August 2016, of French Journal, and there's more there, and this video will be up there, and there's also, you did a reading, didn't you? A reading of your
I did.
Your work?
Yes,
so,
I did an audio reading, yes.
So you can have the audio reading as well. So thanks for doing all this, Jean, and we'll see you.
Thank you so much, Martin. I really appreciate all you've done for me. Okay. Thank you.
Sir, thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.